And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, fellow blood oh. Who am I fooling? This is the Chris Keeper here. Yeah, this month, this show is another jip. Yes. This month is another science fiction movie. Yes, it's great. It's a comedy science fiction movie. It's funny. Oh, yes. It's so amusing when there's no severed limbs and disembowelments. Yes, apparently it was named after a Grateful Dead song. Oh, for Christ's sakes. Really? Really? Just because I mentioned the Grateful Dead. Okay. I'm leaving now. Call me back when somebody sticks a knife in somebody's face.
All right, welcome back to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am Chris Honeywell, and I'm here with the Hair Metal Hero.
Hey, what's up?
And Luke Giaconetti. Giaconetti.
Hey. Giaconetti. Hey, everybody. How are we doing tonight?
Oh, why do I do that? Oh. And Andrew Leland.
Leland.
That was pretty good.
Let me just say this. If you guys head over to our forum, Scott has posted Scott spent the day with Andrew and his family at Universal Islands of Adventure. And let me just say that, as is kind of the thing that happens all the time with podcasters, Andrew looks 100% different than I imagined him in my mind.
You want to hear something really embarrassing? Is I got a bunch of... There were... At one point where I'm like, okay, everybody, we had a whole bunch of people on the show, and I'm like, I need all your pictures so I can put your pictures on other people's heads. And I did a show with Andrew about The Walking Dead versus a British show called Dead Set. And for the cover, so I took out my picture of Andrew Leyland and put it on the zombie head, and I was like, I just couldn't get it out, get this really good. And I remember going, sorry, Andrew, I was hoping to make a better zombie head of you, and he didn't say anything about it. But then when I saw the pictures of him, I realized that that was not his face that I put on that zombie. It was somebody totally different. And because when I saw his face, I'd recognized him from another picture who I had thought was, I think, Sean Foster, another one of our listeners. And had used that head as Sean Foster's head before. And
I do think we all look alike to you?
I think all nerds look alike to me. And but yeah, it was funny when I saw Andrew's family. It's like, wow, they all look like Andrew.
the thing that was funny, and let me just say, hey Andrew and Michael, go listen to Hey Kids Comics, which is a great show.
Yeah,
is that like I said, Andrew looked 100% different because in my mind he always looks like Brian Blessed.
Uh-huh.
Gordon's alive. But Michael, on the other hand, looks pretty much exactly like I pictured him in my mind. So it's kind of a one for two, you know.
I like all the pictures of Michael because Michael's got that like got this like wise ass look on his face, and it's just like, okay, that matches.
But you know, if again, I get to see it. What'd you think of that, Michael? It's all right.
Okay, it's all right.
You know.
Oh, those Brits.
He's the modern Senior Wences.
Wow. We're not here to talk about Hey Kids Comics. We're here to talk about Dark
Beach
Stone.
Balls. Beach yes. Balls. And more beach balls.
Annoying little beach balls.
Boiler and Doolittle and Talby. The whole crew. and 70s beards.
Yeah.
those were the beards that all my friends in high school had when they wanted beards in high school. Those big bushy.
Yeah, that's what
bushy
I'm rocking
hippie
right
beards.
Now.
Yeah, really?
I'm unemployed. I don't got shit to do.
Oh man, I tell you, I hadn't seen Dark Star. It had to be at least 15 years since.
Yeah,
I
me too.
Movie, and I was on job site. I was in Rhode Island for about 6 weeks, and I watched this while I was up in Rhode Island, and I just sitting by myself in my hotel room just laughed and laughed. I had an absolute ball watching this movie again.
I agree. I was sort of I remember being sorely disappointed in it the first time I saw it because it had been such a legendary movie, you know, the first John Carpenter movie, and I lived up John Carpenter's ass because he was a hometown hero. So it was like this holy grail, and there was just no way to watch it until finally, you know, it became available on video. And when I finally got to see it, I was really disappointed. But upon watching it again, I got a lot more of it than I did. And like you said, I was laughing my ass off through the whole thing. It all of a sudden, the humor in it just clicked for me, and oh, I loved it. I loved it. I enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah, it is the comedy version of Alien in 2001.
Mm-hmm. So. With a little Dr. Strangelove thrown in for good measure here and there.
Yeah.
Well, what's really impressive to me is that really just the elements of this film that both not only John Carpenter but then Dan O'Bannon would read. Mm-hmm. Throughout their career. I mean, I've got notes here of, okay, I've got like a column that says Carpenter and then O'Bannon, and just things that we would, you know, especially with Carpenter, that we've seen over and over again during this series. But then if you know anything about, you know, like Alien, that besides the whole, you know, the general concept, some of the details of this were carried over straight over into Alien. I got a note here. It's like, you know, mundane life in outer space.
Yes.
If anything says the first like half hour or so of Alien, it's the mundanity of the fact that they're living on a spaceship in space, something that should be fantastic. It's just a job.
They're more like truckers than anything else.
Yeah.
Basically, they're like the astronaut version of truckers. They're sort of working stiffs.
Or like oil rig workers.
Right, right. Even, yeah. I think that's basically almost exactly what they were. They were some sort of mining fuel workers.
Yeah, they're blowing up planets that are going to be a problem.
Well, that's it. Yeah, and Dark Star. I never really got that. I'm like, is it like in Hitchhiker's Guide where they're making a path or, you know, it's. I always looked at that as just sort of like something they made up for the reason for them to be out there. But I love it as just sort of the dirtbag answer to Stanley Kubrick, who's, you know, so pristine and a lot of money in each shot. And this one's down. It's sort of covering the same themes. And sort of has that, you know, a 2001 beginning of a spaceship out in space, but then they throw country music over it right off the top, and that immediately sets the mood for the rest of the movie, you know.
It's Benson, Arizona.
That must have been hilarious in 1974. That must have been so, you know, novel and unique.
I tell you what's bad is that the first thing that popped into my head, there was an old joke on Mystery Science Theater 3000 where Mike is driving the satellite one night and everybody else is asleep, and he keeps tuning the radio, and all he gets is AM country.
Uh-huh.
And his line is, what are we, in the southern part of the galaxy here? What's going on? And I love that song was not like a stock song. It was written for Dark Star.
Yeah, John Carpenter wrote the lyrics for it.
I love that it's not, you know, you could have gotten some public domain stuff, but no, we're going to take the time to write a corny, you know, country western, you know, countrypolitan song for our science fiction movie.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen nowadays. It would be like Sweet Home Alabama or something like that, you know.
I don't know if it's your student thesis. I don't think you're getting any money.
That's
to buy
true.
Songs.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You'd still find something in the public domain, though, you know. But anyway, it's well, it's like the other piece of music that I really like in this, and again, just made me laugh, is when he's stuck in the elevator and the Barber of Seville begins playing.
Yes.
Well, every time I hear the Barber of Seville, I think of Bugs Bunny. And really, that's kind of a Looney Tunes sort of situation with him stuck
yes.
in the elevator.
And that's an interesting scene. I was watching that and going, where did they get an elevator shaft like this to film this in the cheapness of this production? And then I found out today they filmed that on its side.
Yep.
He basically just sort of like laid on the ground on his side and did it all that way, which it worked great.
Oh yeah, but I mean that whole sequence with Pinbeck and chasing the alien and then the elevator to the whole little thing, that whole section is just gold as far as I'm concerned. Between when he goes in, first goes in to feed the alien. End of that. The whole thing just, oh my god, I was dying.
I was watching it going, this is the origins of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy right here, you know, where all of a sudden space is turned goofy, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there.
It's tickling them at one point, you know?
Oh, it goes into like Three Stooges routines, you know, in a way. You know, just short of him putting his hand up in front of the bridge of his nose to keep him from poking his eyes, you know.
And what's funny also is that in that scene, we get the little leitmotif in the soundtrack. It's kind of like, that's like, to me, that's like the prototypical John Carpenter score right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was basically like his first go at it, and you can hear the basic structure that would run right up till today.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah, that beach ball, what I love about it is they didn't even pretend that it wasn't just a beach ball with feet on the bottom of it. You know, it's a beach ball. It's got the seams, the different colors and everything. It's just...
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, who's to say what aliens are going to look like? Marlon Brando, when we were filming Superman the movie, just said, hey, shoot a green bagel or a green suitcase.
Yeah, just shoot me as a bagel, you know? We'll just do that.
Fishing for 1,000, please.
Oh, boy.
I didn't know we had a Brando impersonator in our stock of podcasters. We'll have to use that in the future,
Oh, Jesus.
We're gonna have to do a Godfather promo sometime here.
No, we gotta do a Dr. Moreau promo.
Oh! We gotta get to Dr. Moreau someday. I've never seen that. I've been saving that one.
The Media Massacre?
Oh, I don't know. That's the thing. I may enjoy it. Who knows? Really?
No, you won't enjoy it.
How can you go wrong? Even if it's terrible, you got Brando chewing scenes with a midget, with one of the most bizarre midgets ever filmed. Yeah. It's so good that it's became like a running character in South Park, you know?
You got to do all three.
I only impersonate from The Godfather and from Superman. Only those two films.
I tell you another thing I really thought was funny here. I like that Boiler thought to bring a lounge chair with him on the space.
Yes.
Oh shit! You're gonna have a lot of downtime.
not like a lazy boy, you know. Just a vinyl lounge chair. Again, is anything else say like 70s than a guy with a beard sitting on a lounge chair, probably with his belly showing? If you're gonna really get accurate about it.
Hey, those are my people now. Don't.
I mean, there was basically, the quote unquote cafeteria they were in was basically a broom closet in the student union that they had like five cracks at, you know, so they had to get it all done. That was the first stuff they shot, was in the broom closet at the student union. That was like their first 16 millimeter film sequence, and they were very, very excited about it. What's really funny is the scene with the beach ball and the elevator shaft are two of the scenes they had to add on to the movie.
Right.
To pad it out to as a feature film, and they weren't very happy with any of the... There's, I guess, I've never seen it. There's a director's cut of this that's... They cut it down to the original because it was originally 55 minutes, a 55-minute piece, and I found this book that I got it as a kid. It was called Omni's Book of Screen Flights and Screen Fantasies, and they got a bunch of filmmakers and science fiction writers to basically talk about different views of the future, and they got Dan O'Bannon to write an article about Dark Star, and... he and John Carpenter were like roommates and best friends, and they sort of worked on it together. And it sounds like pretty much adding the 38 minutes on it to make it a theatrical film pretty much ended their friendship for a long time.
Yeah.
Or at least it definitely ended their roommateship. I guess John Carpenter basically just said, well, you're moving out today. But yeah, they were not, and it was one of those weird things where when it was finished, they had this wonderful 55-minute movie, but there's nothing you can do with a 50. If it was 20 minutes, they could have put it in the festivals as a short, and if it was a half hour longer, it could have been a movie, but I can't remember. Some producer saw it and said, here's some money, and that's when the trouble started. That was the hardest part of the whole production of Dark Star was... film, you know, actually after they'd thought the movie was finished.
Right.
It sounded like a nightmare to me, actually. It usually is. Almost any movie is some sort of nightmare.
Well, the thing that's really amazing to me is that I think when you look at this film and you consider how little money it really was made for, even with the extra scenes in it, then you get just the, you know, it's there's a talent on display here. You know, it's a schlocky sort of movie, but it's well made, and there's good filmmaking skills on display in pretty much every scene of this movie. You know, it's a farce, and it's a strange film, but that's the story. You know, but the technical side of it, you don't have to be a dyed-in-the-wool, jaded film viewer to see talent on display,
right,
in film. You know. It compares with THX-1138 in that sense, is that you couldn't watch that and not think that, in that case, George Lucas, that this guy has some real skill, you know?
Something's going on here, and there were parts of it that actually reminded me of THX-1138. Yeah, the scene with the elevator shaft actually reminded me a bit of that, you know? And they were all feeding off each other, you know, at that point, and their creative energies and such.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fussy computer for... 20? I mean, is that anybody but C-3PO, really?
Oh, yeah.
Nevertheless, the order has been received.
The whole scene where he has the philosophical discussion with the bomb is just a well-written, and, you know, and by the time the bomb goes, okay, I'm going to have to think about this for a while, and then retracts. It's just a great, well-timed bit of comedy, you know, and it also is probably an inspiration for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with, "Hi, I'm Eddie, your shipboard computer. What can I do for you?"
And, you know, and the other part of that, our other computer voice, the ship's voice, the sexy voice.
Uh-huh.
All that made me think of was the chess computer in The Thing. You know, the sexy computer in The Thing. I guess ship's computers have to be sexy. That's because she's taking care of everybody on the ship, you know.
Hey, look, if I'm stuck on that dirty spaceship with a bunch of hairy dudes, I want at least the computer to be female.
Well,
just
also,
saying.
I just have, you know, Hero. I think if you were in that situation, for some reason in my mind, your ship's computer would sound like the governor's secretary from Blazing Saddles.
Oh, indeed it would. Hold that position. The damn thing's warped. Sorry.
This came urgent for you. Sheriff murdered in Rockridge.
Read it, you sick bitch.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, it was also, that computer was also a little bit like Mother, the computer in Alien, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. That's my other note, that... Mother, and again, Mother was, you know, female. She wasn't the sexy female voice, but she was still running everything. And Ripley, doesn't Ripley have an argument with her basically at one point?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. And then actually at the end, she's got to listen to Mother sternly count down destruction.
Yeah. And she goes, "Mother."
Yeah.
Just like Glenn Danzig.
Oh,
that's what this movie was missing, was a little heavy metal to go with the at this time some Deep Purple or something to go with the country. That'd have been a nice touch, but I can understand why it didn't happen.
Well, now that you mention it, there were a little bits of this that reminded me a little bit of the heavy metal movie too, the sort of funkiness of the space. And I think the special effects, now looking at it, it's like, okay, you see the optical printing and stuff like that. And some of the, the meteor storm and stuff are just sort of like weird split screen light effects and stuff. But back in 1974, that must have looked pretty damn handsome for filmmakers. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you can think about that. This is still, this is still before Star Wars, too. So this is still kind of the old fashioned style, ships on wires sort of stuff. So I thought, considering the time and the budget, these held up really well. And another thing that looks really nice to me is the animation. The animation to me looks sort of like if Terry Gilliam was doing sci-fi.
Yes.
Real kind of subtle, but the way it looks has just a little off kilter, a little quirkiness, and I really liked all the animation in this film. Definitely,
yes.
The menus have the computer screens and all that. I just like the way it really. That's something that if John Carpenter doing a science fiction movie, that's what they're going to look like. You know what I mean?
Have either of you ever read the Ray Bradbury story Kaleidoscope?
I have not.
No, I haven't read that one.
It is. They totally. I had to go back because it just, after watching this, it sort of snapped in my head. I believe it's in The Illustrated Man. It's one of the short stories in The Illustrated Man. And it's two astronauts who their spaceship is just blown up. The story starts out right after their spaceship is blown up. And they're the only two left alive, and they're just sort of floating out in separate directions, and one of them ends up in a meteor cluster and the other one ends up as a shooting star going into a planet, or I think it's Earth, and he's just like, and they're talking to each other, and he's like, well, the one guy's like, well, I'm going to be part of this meteor shower and I'm going to be part. And when I went back and found the story, there were whole parts of the dialogue that they totally paid tribute to that, if not, I don't want to say they ripped it off, because I'm sure they were, just. Well,
but the rule. if your budget's less than $10 million, it's a ripoff. If it's more than $10 million, it's an homage.
That's right.
Oh, yes. Semantics.
But that was a great ending. And that ending also reminded me a lot of Dr. Strangelove, too. Yeah, surfing down instead of riding a bomb, but he was a surfer, not a cowboy like Slim Pickens.
And that whole ending, that sells the tagline from the film, which was a spaced out odyssey.
Uh huh.
Ending with the two astronauts with Talby and Doolittle talking, and then going their separate ways, and then surfing. It's like, in the wake of 2001, this is some funny shit right here.
Yes.
It's like, when space became all super serious, now it's time to poke holes in that.
Yes.
Well, I remember when the first time I saw it, I was just like, I didn't like the fact that they looked like space hippies. And I was like, it was just because they were hippies when they were making this movie. But then upon watching it again, I realized, oh no, they're not actually hippies. They're just like Hero. They're in space. There's no girls there. There's no, family functions or any place where they have to look nice. So they just let their hair, they just let their hair grow. Because it was when they had the whole flashback with Pinback watching his 8 tracks of his logs. And you see him in the beginning, and he looks just like your just sort of standard, sort of clean cut you know, guy you would see in a jumpsuit somewhere, you know, and then going through various stages of dishevelment until he was at his current state. But, you know, this time I didn't think of them as young hippie guys, although weren't they were, I couldn't figure out when they were saying they'd been out for 20 years, if that meant 20 years on Earth, because they were so far away from Earth that, you know, 20 years had passed on Earth, because they didn't look like, if they'd been out there 20 years, they would have started out when they were like 8 years old or something like that.
Wasn't there a line, something along the lines of, oh, it's been 20 years on Earth, but we've only aged like 3 years.
5 years or something like that. Yeah, it was unclear. I couldn't figure out what they were trying to say with that.
I think it's just kind of a wave our hand at it and nobody pays attention. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Move up.
Get the beach ball out.
You ever see the movie Thank You for Smoking?
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a great bit in the film Thank You for Smoking, and if you are a smoker or if you believe in smokers' rights, and I'm not a smoker, but I'm big on smokers' rights. There's a great line in that where this guy who was a lobbyist for the tobacco industry meets with a film studio executive, and they want to put their brand of cigarettes in this high-profile science fiction film. And he says, "Well, wait a minute. We can't have them smoking on a spaceship. You know, isn't it an oxygen-rich environment? Wouldn't that cause an explosion?" He goes, "That's an easy fix. Just say thank God we invented the whatever machine that we don't have to worry about this anymore."
Yep.
Well, obviously, in Darkstar, they've invented whatever that machine is, so they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think not just an oxygen-rich atmosphere, but you just got to think the sensitive equipment of a spaceship would not do well with, because you know, I'm a smoker. My grandfather was a smoker for, you know, isn't a chain smoker, and you know, over his Barca lounger in his living room was a brown circular stain, you know, from just the years of the smoke buildup on the ceiling tiles. So yeah, with a sensitive spaceship, you know, every little I always thought that too. But then again, you always think, well, in the future they figured out how to smoke, or they're smoking some sort of fancy.
It's like they're
fancy
smoking
cigarette.
Like cigarettes, you know, it's just water vapor.
Yes, it's space vaporizers.
Yeah. But that, you know, that gets back to the to what we're talking about earlier, about the mundanity of it all. You know, it's I mean, this being 1974, most everybody still smoked. You know, so it's like, well, that's what these are, just workaday guys doing their job. That's what you're gonna do in the break room.
That's what they do. Yeah, that's and you know, I mean, why not smoke?
If you could smoke in hospitals at the time, you know, then it's good for space.
Yeah.
You could smoke in airplanes at the time, too. It always makes me laugh every time I'm traveling. Like I said, I was going back and forth to Rhode Island for a while recently. You get on an airplane, they've still got the no smoking light above your seat. It's like, you've been allowed to smoke in airplanes. Literally as long as I can remember, so I don't understand when we're ever gonna. You know what? I think this flight we're gonna allow it. Okay, everybody, you can light it up if you got it. Nice. Not allowed to bring a lighter on the plane, but you know.
At first, I was like, "Well, maybe when they like we've crossed over into Sweden where you can smoke anywhere." It's like, hey, you know, or it's so funny, and you know, smoking's such a nasty habit too. But there's just. I remember I went to, it was Ohio to see a band, and in New York State, it's been, I mean, I remember smoking everywhere, you know, as a Ute, but, you know, I've gotten so used to it's only outside, you know, in certain places. We went to Ohio, and we're sitting at some place, and we got our cheeseburgers, and we finished our cheeseburgers, and the lady behind the bar goes, "Where are you from?" "We're from..." "Oh, we're from Rochester, New York." And she whips right over and throws an ashtray down on the table. And we look at her and we're like, "Are you serious?" And she's like, "Welcome to Ohio." I got a welcome to New Jersey like that once, too, where we were on the train tracks. And I'm like, "Can we smoke on the train tracks?" And the guy's like, "You can smoke anywhere you goddamn want. It's New Jersey."
No one cares in New Jersey.
It's all toxic waste here.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I love the guy who was, I can't remember which character's name it was, who just was like, fuck everybody, I'm sitting up in the nice seat up in the top and just looking at space. And
Talby, yeah.
Yeah.
Talby's kind of a weird character because he goes on his own little arc trying to fix that, the laser fuse, and then he goes blind for a little while.
Uh-huh.
It's just like...
It basically says he should never have gotten out of that chair is what it said to me.
It's like, if you had stayed in your observation tower, none of this would have happened.
Uh-huh. And just back to the beach ball. I love when they finally take out the beach ball, too. It's just like they poke the air goes out of it, and it's done.
Simplest but, solutions work. If yeah. it looks like a beach ball, let's poke it.
Pop it, yeah.
The real funny thing to me is then Pinback is like, guys, how could it couldn't have, it was just was had gas inside. How could it live if it just was filled with gas inside? It's like even he thinks it doesn't make any sense that this thing is a beach ball with feet.
And they're just like, yeah, it was alive. It was obviously intelligent too, because it was taunting and outwitting him. You know.
Well, I mean, outwitting Pinback isn't going to require yeah. that intelligence. But I love the whole thing with Pinback when we're seeing his. When he's telling his origin story about, you know, that he's not actually Pinback. He's just a guy who was a fuel tech.
Yeah, and Pinback was actually a suicide. and he just sort of got shoved on in his place. Well, that was great because you see him and he's all clean cut at the beginning going, I don't even belong here. And then you see him and he's a little scragglier, but he was going back and forth from being clean cut and scraggly, depending on how, you know, stir-crazy he was at a particular time.
They don't want good morale on this show.
Nah, morale's overrated.
Trying to tell a joke.
No, man. But, as I mean, it's this is one of those films that to me, a good quality about a film is if it exists in its own universe and that universe works. And in this sense, the span and scope of this universe is their ship, and,
yep.
and it makes sense in there, even though it's patently ridiculous as a whole. But the ridiculousness is what makes it work, and that's what makes it funny. And then on top of that, like I said, the fact that it's well made and that a lot of these elements would show up again in later works and clearly was very influential on both of these guys' careers. That to me is just kind of gravy. You know, just overall watching this film is just a joy because it's how do I put this? It's just fun to watch because it obviously isn't taking itself real seriously, and it's reflecting on what had become a genre that had moved away from that and
right.
into being, you know, heavy shit kind of
right.
thing.
So. And good funny sci-fi is hard to find. I'm
yeah.
trying to remember what year A Boy and His Dog came out.
Later than that, I believe.
Later than Dark Star?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But that's another one that reminds me of Dark Star, whereas it has a zero budget, but it manages to, you know, create its own world and be funny and different at the same time.
It was 75 for A Boy and His
75?
Dog.
75? So, yeah, so they were roughly in the
close,
same time
yeah.
period.
Right.
They were right at the beginning of, you know, when people figured out you could do midnight movies. You know, you could have, I remember visiting my aunt in Seattle, and Dark Star and A Boy and His Dog were a double feature on their midnight movie thing. And I was there. If I was there with my dad, I might have gone to see it, but I was there with my mom, so there was no way in hell that I was going to see that double feature. And I remember flipping out because I was thinking, this might be my only chance to see either of these movies. And then VHS and Cinemax happened. And
right, yeah.
It was all over.
But you couldn't have predicted that.
Right, I had no idea that was coming.
What was the film? Oh, there was another 70s kind of sci-fi space comedy where the guy was making little robots. Is that
Silent Running?
Silent Running. That's
Silent
it.
Running. Yes. I'm trying to remember who the director was.
I will
that.
Tell
was,
you momentarily.
It's another. It's somebody else who
Douglas
graduated.
Trumbull.
Douglas
one of the,
Trumbull
yeah.
ended up in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another one where work a day on a spaceship. going stir crazy.
Yeah.
That one was with a more of a tree hugging, you know, conservation theme to it. But yeah, that and that was also probably one of the first origins of cute robots.
Mm-hmm.
So it had Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah.
Which again were midgets setting the president, you know, setting the precedent for a job for Kenny Baker for years. I don't think Kenny Baker was R2-D2 in any of the modern movies. Is he? I think he was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did some of it. Not all of it, obviously, but
I was going to say he must be getting kind of old, and it must be pretty painful to get stuffed into R2-D2, you know. At a certain point, same with Anthony Daniels, it's just like, oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, that dude's still bone thin.
That's true.
How do you put this? Does him being in the suit really add that much to the performance? He can barely move.
Look, his emotion came through. It came through the robot. Droid, excuse me. I mean, for C-3PO, yes, but for R2-D2, hell no.
Well, sometimes his face would literally come through. I hear on the Blu-ray there's a few scenes where you can see Kenny Baker peering out through R2-D2's eyes.
I will have to review.
That means that in story there's a corpse stuffed inside that R2.
Yeah, it's like the stories of the Wizard of Oz with munchkins hanging from the trees.
It's like the Cybermen from the 80s, you know, you could see the human faces behind the suits, and it's like, well, was that intentional or not? Was the BBC just really cheap?
I've noticed
most likely.
Or a little of column A, a little of column B.
A little column A, a little column B. I've noticed on the Blu-rays of Star Wars, you can make out Dave Prowse's eyes behind the amber-colored lenses lot easier.
I've heard that. I've heard that, like, Yoda, you can especially see a lot of the just sort of rubberiness of his whole body.
There's nothing rubbery about Puppet Yoda. Puppet Yoda's awesome.
Yeah, it's all foam. But you know, this is a film, again, we're talking about Blu-ray here, and you get to a point with some of these new formats where now you're starting to do the films a disservice because they look too good.
I
agree.
Well, like, if you took, I don't think, like, something like Dark Star, you could take that. If you put that on Blu-ray, it would probably just all the seams would start showing, and it would be ugly. It's almost better to see, the version I saw was definitely not off the nicest print in the world. I don't know if there really probably are very many nice prints of Dark Star laying around, but, you know, it was kind of a beat-up, faded print, and that worked to the film's benefit as far as I was concerned, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
well, I can tell you from experience, Logan's run on Blu-ray, all the model shots, like the exterior of the city and stuff, it looks so fakey. It looks so modelly.
Well, yeah, it looks like you're so probably going through a ride at Disney World where you're looking at tiny monorails and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's what it looks like.
Something I'm not up to Blu-ray yet. I'm still at DVD, but you know, one studio that was and still is to this day reluctant to release their films on Blu-ray is Toho, because when you start getting into, you know, kaiju film, you know, it's all just suits and wires and models when you really get down to it, and
they were depending on that low quality to keep them
right
as realistic as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, it's to the point where even on, you get some of the older, like kind of golden age of Daikaiju films from the 60s, the ones that are in color. On DVD, you can see the wires, and then on VHS, you couldn't. Let alone, forget Blu-ray. You
know, right.
Normal, standard definition DVD, you could see the wires. So I could understand that. And what's also funny is that another group that was real hesitant to make the move to HD and finally did a couple of years ago was the WWE. As we're recording this, WrestleMania 28 is going on, so...
John Cena! John Cena! Sorry.
you know it. But they were also hesitant to go because they're afraid that it would be too high def and people would see that they were working light. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So, well, but you could see the zits on all the female wrestlers.
Forget
thighs.
Female wrestlers. Look up Mike McGillicuddy's last interview on NXT Season 2. That was horrific with whatever thing was growing on his lip. It's like, ugh.
It's called herpes. I'll direct you to Wikipedia for more information.
The son of Mr. Perfect, he's not absolutely perfect. Let's just say.
Well, Mr. Perfect threw a pass to himself and caught it.
Because he was absolutely
perfect. Sorry.
All right. But anyway, remember Dark Star? That was a perfect movie, wasn't it?
Oh, it's not perfect, but it's fun.
Yes, it is. That's the first John Carpenter movie, and it was the next to the last one, wasn't it? Of our coverage.
Mm-hmm. We got one more of the series here.
Two more?
Well, there are two more films, but I think our plan was what we were going to come back and do The Ward at a later date.
Okay, that sounds good.
So that leaves the one that everybody keeps bugging us for, because, you know, obviously we forgot it.
Which one are they bugging us for? Which one did we miss? I can't think of one we missed.
Is there one we missed, Chris? I don't remember. What one haven't we...
It was one of his minor films, I think. One of his just, like, throw-off
films.
Oh,
it's the one with the babysitters, wasn't it?
Yeah. It had that...
Yeah, babysitters, yeah.
It had that chick whose boobs you saw in...
Trading Places,
yes.
Amongst other things.
Yes.
Isn't she in there, too?
Who, where?
PJ Souls, isn't she in that also?
Yes.
Yeah.
Her and her boobs as well are in that film.
I think we've drawn that out as far as we can.
Yes.
Yes, we will be doing Halloween. We did not forget it. How could we?
When you said perfect film, I'm like, Halloween might be one of those perfect horror movies.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it in a few years, but I'm really looking for. I've watched it many, many times. I have no...
Halloween,
no doubt my opinion is not going to change on Halloween.
Halloween is one of the films that I own multiple versions of, as in multiple cuts, because I own the regular cut, and then I actually have the DVD of the TV version too.
I love the TV version.
With the extra scenes added in.
Yes, I remember that.
Back in the day, they used to film, for some of our younger listeners who may not know this, they used to film extra scenes for films like this, so that when they showed up on network TV, when they cut out violent stuff, they could put in these filler to pad the film out to TV feature length. And Halloween was such a film.
And if I recall, the filler wasn't too bad. It was probably real, just cut shots that...
They did bring everybody back to film it after the fact. The only one that really comes out... And I'll just throw this out there, and we'll talk about it next time, is Jamie Lee Curtis after she took a shower. Yes.
Sorry.
Except it's, you know, she's Laurie Strode, so she's covered from head to toe in towels. But
it's even hotter.
Even hotter. It's in a burka. Hero would be losing his shit right now. But
I have a weak. I have many weak spots for Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she still looks good.
Yes, she does.
I was watching Freaky Friday last night, and I'm like,
yeah, she looked good in that. Every time I see them goddamn commercials, it's like, I could buy me some fucking yogurt. It's got that special shit in it. Yeah.
Even Jamie Lee Curtis talking about being regular doesn't bother me one bit. Nope.
See, between that and True Lies, you know, we're just living it up.
Okay, now we gotta stop now, because if we start talking about True Lies, I'll
stop.
Tell you about some chafing that occurred during that film.
All right, we're out of here.
About chafing, where else can you go? You gotta end the show. There's no place else to go.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.
Down, but I see only one. Trying to think I'm over you. I find I've just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no more in the light. And how I miss those desert skies. You're
seem so much kinder when we watch them, you and I.
Sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today. Anytime you plan to visit Amazon.com, please be aware that if you use the Amazon.com link located on our website, www.twotruefreaks.libsyn.com, Two True Freaks will receive a referral bonus for any items you purchase. There is absolutely no additional cost to you whatsoever for doing this. All proceeds go directly toward keeping new episodes of all your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated podcasts rolling. And it really helps us out. So please, use our Amazon.com link anytime you plan to visit Amazon.com.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com. where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass. And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook too. My name is spelled S-C-O-T-T-G-A-R-D-N-E-R.
You can friend me on Facebook too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Dude.